first action this morning will be a legislative action, so I'm going to open the public hearing. It is 9:01 a.m., and I need a motion to read the ordinance by title only.
Madam Chair, I'd make a motion to read, to have the first reading of Ordinance 2016-004, an ordinance amending the text of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code Ordinance 94-4 to add agriculture, farming, and farm use to Article 63 of the Rural Industrial RI Zone and Article 1010.3, Community Light Industrial Park CLI, and 101.4, Community Industrial CI in the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community.
And I will second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Harris?
Yes.
Commissioner Hatch?
Yes.
Commissioner Walker?
Yes. Motion carries. Title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the text of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, to add agriculture, farming, and farm use to Article 63, the Rural Industrial RI Zone, and Articles 101.3, Community Light Industrial Park CLI, and 101.4, Community Industrial CI, in the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community. Okay, we have with us today Julie Smelser, the Community Development Director, who will give us some information on this particular ordinance. And for the record, I would like to say that I am engaged in agriculture in Josephine County, so there's a potential conflict of interest. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Julie Smelser for the record. So basically what this proposal does is it allows agriculture in our industrial areas. We find this as a great benefit to the county because we have several industrial parks and industrial areas that currently are not being utilized to their maximum potential. Basically, the old mill sites in particular are one that comes to mind. They're sitting idle, and this would allow the opportunity for those mill sites to be used for agricultural operations. When this went before the Plan Commission, there was discussion over allowing marijuana specifically in these industrial areas, but I want it to be clear that this is for all agriculture. It's not just a marijuana crop. It's any form of agriculture somebody wants to do in those industrial areas would be allowed, such as the processing of beans or tomatoes or herbs of some kind. This was a difficult decision for some of us to process because our industrial land is very limited in the county. We're at 1%, and ideally we'd like more industrial land to help market the area, but the industrial land we currently have just isn't in the area where we can maximize its use, so it made sense to offer to convert some of these lands for agriculture versus keeping them solely in a zoning district. Moving forward, I think we need to look at increasing more industrial land. As you know, we've had these discussions before, I think, where we need to do more to enhance our larger industrial parks, such as the Merlin North Valley Industrial Park, and then down in the Illinois Valley, where we can provide the services necessary for good quality industrial operations, such as factories or larger companies. In Josephine County, we only 3.5% of our land is actually in farms, so this will also allow us the opportunity to increase those areas where we could have farming. Granted, we're only increasing it by about 1%, but to us that's pretty critical, especially since these areas can be set up for a more intensive agricultural operation. Currently in the state of Oregon, when you look at the National Ag Statistical Service results, Josephine County ranks 35 out of 36 for agricultural production in the state of Oregon. So even by opening it up to this 1%, we can hopefully increase the amount of land that we have in farms or in agriculture to help increase the revenues and commodities, et cetera, from some of these crops that could potentially be in these areas. We also know that our agricultural land has dropped by 25% over the last five-year period. Thereby, again, this helps increase the amount of land that we can have available for agricultural production. And again, we just feel it's a good direction to go as far as the Plan Commission and staff because it does allow for the increase of agriculture while still maintaining the availability to do other crops in these areas and then hopefully look at other areas to develop for more industrial areas that could actually support the type of quality industrial development we want. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them. Commissioner Hare?
Yes, I had a couple of things. I think specifically the deficit in the code prohibits the production side of agriculture. You can do processing and things, but it wouldn't allow you to do like nursery style things of growing, cultivating, that sort of thing. And nursery is the leading agricultural commodity as far as value in the state of Oregon. So we're prohibiting it from land that could probably be pretty conducive from a standpoint that a lot of these old mill sites have water rights, and they're closer to thoroughfares of commerce, whereas some of the other ag lands are fairly remote, may or may not have the infrastructure to support such a high intensity kind of an ag business. I think my concern initially was that what you pointed out, the shortcoming the reason why we may have not allowed agriculture as a county on industrial lands or at least ag production was that may not be always the highest and best use or the most value. But I think it's not fair from a county perspective to tell landowners that they don't know what is best for their land. As far as value is concerned, as soon as there's an industrial alternative that doesn't include agriculture, that generates more revenue or is more productive or more lucrative, I'm sure property owners of industrial, commercial light industry, they'll make that decision that says, well, you're going to have to go, you know, either as a tenant or their own enterprise to some other, you know, land for productivity of agricultural commodity if there's something as an alternative. But we're not there. Like you said, there's a significant amount of industrial land as a proportion of the industrial land that we have in Josephine County that's not being utilized at all and hasn't been for my entire lifetime since those mills or whatever else was there in production have shut down. And that's not the highest and best use, obviously. They're just laying fallow and deteriorating, actually, not maintaining water rights or having infrastructure improved and maintained over time. So I think this could be a really good thing. The other thing that I wanted to say was your statistic of the Josephine County. There's 36 counties in Oregon. We're ranked 35. I wonder what that county is that ranks 36th in agricultural production. But that's a statistic that I assume predates the state legislature designating marijuana as an agricultural commodity, because I think we're number one or number two relative to Jackson County for that. And as far as value is concerned, if that's captured accurately, we might find ourselves going very, very quickly to the top 10 in the state, at least per capita or per, if they allocated it per as a percentage of agricultural land relative to the entire county, we're right up there, I would imagine, with the value of what we're getting out of the crop.
I would agree with that, Commissioner Hare. You know, I think that the way they run the data, they're always a year or two behind. And with marijuana becoming such a recent legal crop in Oregon, those statistics aren't going to show up yet.
Yeah.
But when we talk probably next year at this time, I think those numbers would probably be different.
Right. And I think the point that you made was really, really key about it isn't just marijuana. Marijuana may have driven this ordinance to come to fruition, but it really could be a benefit to the viticulture industry or anything else that may need those kinds of lands of high density, high industrial use. So I think it could be beneficial across the board.
Yes, I agree. One of the other points with allowing the production of agriculture in these industrial areas is that's something that can be easily converted back to its original format. So if there's market demand to now use these buildings for something, like you said, a higher and better use, it's easier, I don't want to say to get rid of agriculture on those lands, but it's easier to convert it back to its original format than, let's say, you would allow some other use that perhaps uses massive structures with footings and concrete and substantial improvements to the property, where agriculture typically is easier to convert back when you need it for the land for a better, higher and better use. So.
Well, the ordinance is not excluding any particular existing use of that. It is simply allowing the added use of the agriculture, farm, and farm use to Article 63. It's simply adding that. It's not exclusively excluding previous usages.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I mean, I appreciate the concept that, you know, it'll be interesting to see how beans and corn will add to it. I mean, honestly, that is going to be used for cannabis grows in some sense. And that's where the interest is. So, okay, but it does not mean that that is an exclusionary use of that only for cannabis. It is simply allowing it, if it can be used for any kind of viticulture, if it can be used, fine. It's not exclusively used for cannabis.
That is correct.
I just had one more thing. I think this dovetails really well with the board's intent of trying to capture, like you said, this new industry that's been legalized here. It's not a new industry. It's just been newly legalized. And from a standpoint of really what's adding to the economy here locally is the value-added component. It's not just the production side. And if you can integrate that production into potentially the value-added and not have to move off of that, there's an efficiency associated with that to having large-scale agriculture all in one kind of one-stop shop, especially with the high concentration. This industry doesn't take up a lot of room, relatively speaking, to other agricultural commodities. It's not wheat. It's mm-hmm. not soybeans. It's not corn. It's a high concentration value commodity. And if you can just, you know, integrate that into an industrial piece of property that's 20, 30, 50 acres, you're going to have the efficiency of standardized production, value-added components right there on the premises, and you can control, you know, the quality and the security element of it from start to finish to the market. There's a lot of benefits that I think we maybe take for granted in just allowing this as part of the industrial thing that could really put us in. It's a competitive nature for this. I mean, you see in Jackson County, they're restricting this from rural residential, and we don't have that on our code right now. I think that's a positive element, and everything we can do to try to increase value and add jobs and contribute positively to the economy, I think, is a really good thing. It's here to stay, as Commissioner Heck has said, you know, a million times if he said it once. It's just, how do we make it into as positive an element? And getting it into industrial land, where that's the place where you put stuff you don't want to happen anywhere else. So if there's more of an opportunity to do it there, it maybe relieves the pressure from people doing it on RR next to somebody's bedroom or their deck, or in a place that maybe isn't as appropriate as industrial, light industrial, or community light industrial. I think we're moving as positive steps, as opposed to saying no, you can't do it here. Yes, you can do it over here. So try to. From a positive standpoint, the carrot rather than the stick in that situation.
Right, and we always do want to promote the value-added agriculture. We'd much rather see our products have that value added here in Josephine County rather than take that product, send it somewhere else where there they enhance the product or do the value added to it. So it is really that maximum use of the property and of benefit to whatever crop we have out there.
Great. Thank you.
That's all right. You may sit down. I just want to make a comment also that when it comes to agricultural products, the Willamette Valley in northern part of Oregon is well known for its nursery industry for various plants in the greenhouses. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it's, you know, miles and miles of these places, and we're one of the number one producers of those plants. However, here in southern Oregon, a lesser known fact is that we are well known for seed production. There's a lot of organic seeds that are shipped all over the world, and a lot of that is centered in the Applegate and Williams Valleys. And I'm hoping that perhaps this might help some of those people who are experiencing growth but need additional facilities, that perhaps this will be also beneficial to them for their seed products and their herb products that are known all over the world. So that's a major industry here. And I think this might facilitate some of that, too, when they need additional facilities and trying to find a place to put it. So I think it's a good thing. Okay.
I had one more question. I should have gone through. Ms. Smeltzer, is there anything? I know that originally when we chartered this to the Rural Planning Commission, and it was a little narrower in scope from a standpoint that it was looking to permit just within greenhouses. It was an indoor element. And I think the board agreed to have that broadened and we removed that. Has anything changed from the original intent to just allowing the agricultural element of production on industrial lands?
It was presented to the Rural Plan Commission whether they wanted to restrict it to indoor or allow it outdoor, and they chose to allow outdoor as well to make sure that it was maximizing the availability of the property.
That's great, because I think a lot of these commodities, nursery included, and I have toured, I have an ag business degree from Oregon State, it depends on the season. You know, you'll have a commodity that will last several years, 1 year, a couple of months, but it's hardly ever in one spot. It moves throughout like a chain, and it seems like they always end up as an outdoor element, you know, before it's totally mature and stuff. So it would be really terrible for this code to be broadened, but just still restricting just to indoor. So that's good.
Right. There were some counties that do restrict it just to, or some areas that do restrict it just to the indoor growing or to greenhouses. When you look at, and I'll take the marijuana industry as an example, a lot of those are grown in greenhouses, and it's favorable that way because they can control, you know, the chemicals, they can control rain damage to the plants. However, in the marijuana industry, we also have plants that are too big to be in a greenhouse. So by restricting it to greenhouses, we would be restricting the strain or the type of crop that could be grown on those properties. That was not the intent,
Great. Is
our understanding.
Thank you.
Okay. And I would be remiss if I did not take the opportunity, talking about the seed industry that is in Josephine County, to hopefully see a revival of some legislative revival of the non-GMO use that was passed in Josephine County but was struck down because of the legal questions. But that's a big concern, especially the folks down under Williams Valley down there, because that drift, and they're very concerned about that. But we've got some tremendous industries that are not big name industries, mm-hmm. but they do a lot of good stuff, and plus that, it's their job, it's their work, it's their family. And it would be nice to see some revival of that in our state legislature to allow Josephine County or other counties to restrict GMO seeds. But that not necessarily here on the cannabis on this first action.
So. Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Melser. I'm going to open it up to public comment. Is there anyone that wishes to comment on this first reading of this ordinance? Mr. Ford.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. I think you guys have done a great job on this proposal. Not limiting it just to the cannabis industry is a great thing. I can see this being maybe a segue into vertical hydroponic farming, biochar production. I think there's a lot of things that could end up in our industrial areas, and so I think that this is a well-written and well-thought-out draft. The only thing I could see, and maybe it's just the way I read it, it may not be, it seems like we're limiting it just to simply the Merlin area at this point. I think it should be opened up, if I did read it right, it should be opened up to any of our industrial areas. I know that we have some that Spalding, and I know they're not going to be with city ordinances. They may not be doing the cannabis type products, but I think it could segue into, like I said, hydroponic, vertical farming, biochar production. So I think that would be the only idea I would have. If it is truly just for the Merlin area, it should be expanded to all of our industrial areas in our county. Thank you.
It is all the industrial areas in the county. The reference there to the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community is a separate entity that has that code, so we had to state it as such. All of the others are the rest of the county. So it is. Thank you, Mr. Ford. I can see where that would be misconstrued by people, but we had to state that because it is a separate entity. But Ms. Meltzer, do you know when that was incorporated? It was incorporated for specific reasons, and it's been some time, at least 20 years, I think.
Yeah. I do not know when that was incorporated. I do know we have separate standards for that industrial area. But just for clarification, this amendment would apply to all of our industrial areas throughout the county.
Okay, thank you. All right, I think that may have been when they were working on the water, wasn't water line and the business community out there in Merlin. But it's been about 20 years, so it's been a while. But that's why it's stated that way, because it is a separate entity, and we're including that. So, okay. Any other public comment? Being none, I will bring it back to the board. I need a motion to approve the first reading and schedule the second reading and adoption.
So, Madam Chair, I'd make a motion to approve the first reading of Ordinance 2016-004, an ordinance amending the text of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, to add agriculture, farming, and farm use to Article 63, the Rural Industrial RI Zone, and Article 101.3, Community Light Industrial Park, CLI, and 101.4, Community Industrial CI in the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community, and scheduling the second reading for August 31st, 2016.
And I'll second that.
All right. Any further discussion?
My time's up. Made it under the bell.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. And the next hearing will be August the 31st, 9 a.m. here in at this building. And I'm going to close the public hearing at 9:22 a.m. Okay. Commissioner Hex said he thought that there was a proclamation this morning.
Yes, Commissioner Hare has it.
Okay, Commissioner Hare has the proclamation.
I do. I have one.
Okay, I didn't have it on my schedule, so I'm sorry.
It isn't on the schedule. It didn't make it, unfortunately. It was just brought to my attention yesterday. I was planning on bringing it up under other, but this is where we usually handle proclamations, so if the board would indulge me,
yes.
I'd love to do it right
no
now.
Objection?
No.
Okay.
It's in the matter of proclaiming the day of August 20th, 2016 as National Honeybee Awareness Day. It kind of goes hand in hand with what we just did with our industrial lands and allowing them agriculture use in that area. The proclamation reads, whereas the honeybee is critical to the process of pollination, with one bite of food and three benefiting directly or indirectly from honeybee pollination. And whereas honeybees are essential to production of more than 90 food crops, the bee pollination is responsible for roughly $15 billion in added crop value. And whereas honeybees face a significant threat from colony collapse disorder, which has been linked with disease pathogens, parasites, environmental stress, loss of natural habitat, and inappropriate use of pesticides and herbicides, among other factors. And whereas the honeybee works together with other bees in the bee colony as a single, vibrant, living organism that helps to maintain healthy ecosystems. And whereas the United States Department of Agriculture is working in cooperation with other federal agencies, universities, industry, and additional partners to find ways to improve honeybee health and habitat. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim the day of August 20th, 2016 as National Honeybee Awareness Day in Josephine County, and encourage citizens to celebrate the Honeybee Awareness Day and celebrate the honeybee and its many contributions and with appropriate observances and activities. Dated today, the 17th of August, 2016, and signed by the full board. I'm going to probably give this to, there's a honeybee, Southern Oregon Honeybee Keepers Association. I spoke in at their meeting a couple of months ago, and was working on a project to try to, Josephine County has roughly 30,000 acres, and a lot of those are timber. They're not farm, they're forested. But actually the forest, you may not recognize it from just the first glance, but it has a lot of opportunities for honeybees that most people would probably not recognize. And so working with their director, we were going to work on an opportunity in somewhat remote but accessible areas to allow beekeepers to, for a very, you know, small permit or whatever, to be able to put honeybees out there. They're really looking for more opportunities, and it would benefit, I think, the ecosystem at large to have those pollinators out there. But we're still struggling for a place that has water in accessibility. It's accessible to water. It's an integral part. In this time of year, water is pretty scarce, so you got to find a place that works really well for the honeybee, not just for food sources, but for water as well. And that's been one of our challenges. But we hope to present some options to the board maybe this fall for rolling out in the spring and starting small, but every little bit helps. So I think one of the things that was mentioned in that a proclamation had to do with application of pesticides and herbicides. Those that are licensed for this in our Public Works Department and others, they often get it get it right, because they've been trained. They don't say when there's one teaspoon, two teaspoons is better. No, that doesn't really work. Maybe do two applications, but don't do a double application. So just take those things into consideration when you're kind of managing your own property, and they can go a long way in maintaining the quality in our habitat. I know that it might be anecdotal, but it's been said that if the honeybee population were to, for some reason, collapse, humans would have about 3 years before we would probably find ourselves very close to extinction. So that's how reliant we are, and I figured it probably appropriate to pay tribute by small proclamation in one day. So I appreciate the board supporting that, and I apologize for it not getting on the agenda sooner.
Thank you. I know there's certain plants that attract honeybees, as well as other flying pollinators. And so check those out if you're going to put plants in your yard, to put some of those in, because they,
yeah.
I have bee balm and yarrow and those kinds of things. They just love those.
Yep.
And so, you know, you put those in and they'll come. So that's a good thing. All right. Moving on to our administrative actions. And I see that we have all of the presentations are by individuals in the courthouse. But we have Mr. Graves, and I see he's here, and he's item 2G. I'd like to know if the board would mind if we move that one up to first.
Certainly, we can hear from it for
okay.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So the administrative actions, item 2G, will have Mr. Graves make his presentation in regards to the approval of the master consulting agreement with WH Pacific for environmental engineering design and engineering construction services of FAA AIP projects at the Grants Pass Airport. And those are a lot of acronyms, the FAA being Federal Aviation Administration, and the AIP being the Airport Improvement Plan.
And
Mr.
maybe
Graves.
You can speak to the consent calendar items 4C and
I'm sorry?
D. Maybe he can speak to items 4C and D while he's here.
Sure. At your risk, I'm happy to speak to all those items.
Right.
Yes, we have those. We had moved those to consent, but yes, absolutely, items 4, C, and D. And so when I'm going to read those too, because they'll probably overlap a little bit. 4C is task order number 1 with WH Pacific for environmental engineering design services on the Grants Pass Airport. This is the taxiway design project. The difference in these is one is the contract with them and the other is the actual project. And then item 4D is task order number 1 with Precision Approach Engineering for environmental and engineering design services at the Illinois Valley Airport for FAA AIP grant 007 for upgrade of runway lighting, airport electrical services, and redesigned park ramps. So, Mr. Graves.
Yes, good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Larry Graves, manager for the Josephine County Airports. The master consulting agreement in front of you is a 5-year agreement. It's one that we traditionally enter into with an engineering services firm so that they can provide the expertise in airport civil engineering that we don't have here locally at the airports or at Josephine County. And they are very familiar with all of the FAA specifications requirements for capital improvements at our airports. So I would ask that the commissioners agree to this. We have been in a contractual relationship with WH Pacific for about 15 years now, and we put out another request for qualifications. We had the statement of qualifications submitted by 4 different companies and evaluated by a group of people who are comprised of members of the Airport Advisory Board, Rob Brandis, our Public Works Director, a few other people who are responsible adults, and they scored WH Pacific very highly. Since we have 3 existing projects with WH Pacific at Grants Pass Airport, I made the decision based on the committee's evaluations of WH Pacific and the fact that we have some ongoing relationships with them to make my recommendation to the commissioners that we hire them for another 5-year contract at Grants Pass Airport only. And then as 2 weeks ago, you approved our 5-year contract with Precision Approach Engineering for contracts at or projects work done at the Illinois Valley Airport. So we've decided to split those things up. I think it makes it
easier for WH Pacific to pay closer attention to the projects that we have here at Grants Pass Airport without putting too much on their plate. And I think we're getting the best of both worlds, actually. So the overall project or master consulting agreement per se doesn't cost the county anything. It's just our agreement that we will hire them exclusively for FAA or FAA specification type projects at the Grants Pass Airport. And so the related task order number one, which is on the consent calendar, it will be our first project specific task order with WH on this new agreement. The cost to the county will be the matching funds required. The FAA is providing most of the money for our AIP projects. In the particular case of task order one, this is a state funded program, and we have a regional solutions transportation grant. Right now it stands at $344,000. The total estimate of task order one done by WH is $282,283, and therefore I think our risk is minimal in that we think the cost, I think the cost will be covered completely by the state grant. So those things, kind of those concepts go hand in hand, the master consulting agreement and then the task order number one. So
okay. Madam Chair, there's, I think, efficiencies in having somebody on retainer for something so complex. Anybody coming in, it's almost like the person that we use for our audit. You have to learn kind of how we do things, and the airport is no different than that, other than the fact that we all have to comply with the FAA standards, all airports. It would be really challenging, I think, to switch project to project, you know, different engineers this way, because all things kind of interrelate at the airport, and having that that knowledge. Unfortunately, you said in deliberations either last week or the prior week that some turnover has occurred in WH Pacific, as it always does with any firm, but that hopefully that there'll be this transition of knowledge with those contractors. I'm glad to hear that they're still the preferred contractor for the engineering. And you can't give all of the deference because they have been the previous, but
I think
they've done quality work and gotten us through some challenging situations in the past, and that's served us well.
In speaking to the issue of turnover, two of the three principals who I deal with currently at WH have been there in the past, and Pete Murphy is our project engineer right now with WH. And he was the project engineer of record when Grants Pass Airport's runway was completely rehabilitated back in 2009, 2010. So he didn't work with me on any projects in the 2011 through 16 timeframe, but he's back on our job, so to speak. So, and I'm working with him on the AWOS installation and the West Area Hangar access job that we have going right now. So,
I bet he'll be surprised because prior to 2009, the amount of activity in projects out at the airport was fairly limited. If I look back at the scope of things, there was a stack, but it wasn't in those things that were being accomplished. It was those things that needed to get done. And frankly, you've been just a champion of making sure that that checklist is getting checked off in any way we can. I mean, I think it was pretty creative for us to come together and say, Regional Solutions needs a project from Josephine County over the last couple of years. And maybe it didn't, you know, it's exactly round hole, round peg. It was a round hole, square peg, if they were even still pegs. But we, you know, got it done. And I think it did everything we wanted it to do from the onset. If you're playing a game of chess with the just different parties, it all lined up and the dominoes fell just the way we wanted to. And I think that's a success that Regional Solutions can look at, is that's what they're supposed to do. If it was the easy stuff, that's going to be done by somebody else. The whole purpose for Regional Solutions is taking on those challenging projects that have languished and see them through to fruition. So
it was great. It was great that they agreed to pick up that piece, because funding from the FAA has a lot of moving parts and a lot of prerequisites and requirements, et cetera. And if the FAA itself decides that through, for whatever reason, historical record or whatever, that capital improvements at Josephine County's two airports are a low priority, then they'll never happen. They'll never happen. And so part of the work here for the last 5 years has been to, number one, convince the FAA that we are worthy and that these airports are important to the transportation infrastructure of the national transportation system, as well as that of Oregon and our region.
And that the projects they start and endorse in the get-go will be done to completion with a partnership of not just Josephine County, but the region itself.
Yes.
The state wants these things to happen.
The concept of skin in the game, so to speak. Yeah. And so the fact that, that the state of Oregon and the local transportation commission here in Region 3 saw fit to assign this large amount of money, almost $400,000, as a commitment to getting this project started, that was the catalyst to get the FAA to move up or even put it on the books, construction money for the parallel taxiway out there, which is on the order of, you know, $1.5 million or more, we'll see.
Yeah.
So, and that construction money will be coming in the next fiscal year, 2017. So
great.
You know,
spent right here in the county.
Yes, it will. One of the things that, in just a moment, Mr. Graves, one of the things that is not mentioned in this is we talk about how it improves the airport and how it improves the transportation and that kind of thing. But when you talk about those large grants that Mr. Graves has been able to attract and to bring in with the assistance of Commissioner Hare working with the Regional Solutions as well as the other ones that we've all worked on, those are jobs. You know, those companies hire people to do that work. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talking about $1 million contract, a construction contract. They're hiring people here to do those jobs. And the electrician is electrician that works out there. He's a local person, you know, and so it's really quite an economic boost that has been provided to the tune of like $6 million. And those are all jobs that are provided in our community other than just saying we're improving the airport. So I think it's quite an economic boost to our community to have these kinds of contracts coming in to our community. So thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you can move on to the IV.
There's a phrase in the, you know, in the industry called the force multiplier. And so when we get these improvements built and installed at our two airports, that opens the door for more commercial activity at each airport. The second parallel taxiway at Grants Pass is going to open up 8 more commercial lots along Flaming Road, where I've been turning away people for years because they wanted to build their commercial hangars right there. It's perfect. It's on airport property, et cetera, but we couldn't get their airplanes to the runway safely. And so this second parallel taxiway is key to that. And as soon as that taxiway is in, we're going to have a lot of commercial activity on Flaming Road. We'll have a lot of aviation businesses putting up hangars and offices, and we'll have more employment out there and a lot more activity.
And that'll drive the need for a longer or an extended runway.
Yes,
and
it will.
It all starts with that one little drop over the waterfall, and the rest, you know,
well,
just starts
lots
happening.
Of baby steps that all need to be in the same direction. If we can keep doing that,
yep,
we're good. I appreciate the support I've received from the three of you over the last several years, very much so. It hasn't always been that way.
You're welcome. Well,
and I know that you're not here to wave your flag and everybody give congratulations to you, but I mean, there are a lot of things that take place in the county that happen because of certain managers or department heads that are working very diligently behind the scenes or not in the promotional front page, that things are taking place, things are getting done, and we don't really know about them until, there's a new hangar out there or whatever. But that represents a lot of work that you and as primarily you have leading the whole charge have done, and you are to be congratulated for what we have today is a good reflection upon your tenacity and ability.
Well, standing on the shoulders of giants, so to speak. There's been a lot of work that went before me, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing that wasn't just mentioned is the fact that a lot of people look at this area. Commissioner Walker's touted that, you know, we have a lot of online businesses. It could be a tech kind of community, you know, having industrial land available. But if you want to court a Tesla of the world to come up to here and they can't fly in because their jet has no place to park, that's as important as having, you know, parking spaces downtown on G Street. If you don't have a place for these businesses to relocate, we're not competitive. And they look at the Bens, the Redmonds, someplace else of the world. They don't even look here if you can't land an aircraft. And I know that Krauscraft wasn't always this big. They didn't always have their airplane. And Dutch Bros is using the smaller airplanes they are today, but that's not the airplanes they're going to be using tomorrow. And if we're not keeping up with those industries that are either here or want to relocate here, they'll go someplace else, you know, tomorrow. And we'll miss that opportunity for additional employment, even if we get the sewer system fixed up there. So it all has to be done. Why are you working on this? Why are you working on that? Because they all go together. And but for, you know, they only need one reason to say no, even if they have 10 reasons to say yes. So removing those reasons to say no is key to the economic, you know, vitality of our future here. So.
Agreed.
Okay. The Illinois Valley Airport, that one, that is the task. We approved that one last. We approved the contract last week, and this is the first task order. Talk a little bit about the IV Airport.
Right. This is sure. 4D on the agenda.
This is 4D.
Yeah, and this is with our other engineering services company, which we signed a contract with them 2 weeks ago at the WBS then, Precision Approach Engineering. They're also a very highly reputable company. They've been operating in this theater in the state of Oregon for decades. And so the improvements that are represented in this particular task order are being funded, as opposed to at Grants Pass with a state, this is a federal grant. This is an AIP grant, and it's grant number 7 for that airport. This will involve a complete replacement of the main electrical panel at the airport, which controls all the airport lighting, the radio system, et cetera. We have an old circuit breaker panel that's in an old warehouse that has push-button circuit breakers, which you can't even buy them anymore. They're not to code, and the system is constantly having to be patched together by our very capable maintenance technician, Jason Davis. So we'll get a completely renewed electrical service going into the airport infrastructure, and then from that, we're going to be able to install modern runway lighting called a MIRL, M-I-R-L. I live in a world of acronyms. It's a medium-intensity runway lighting system. It will be pilot-controlled lighting, so somebody who's approaching from 10 or 15 miles away can click their microphone 3 times on a specific frequency, and the runway lights will come on automatically at night or, you know, during the day, during bad weather, for example.
Garage door open to work.
Yeah, yeah. Neat stuff. We'll have a precision approach path indicator lighting system. We'll have strobes, runway end identifier lights at each end of the runway. It's going to be a real airport, you know, finally. A few other things that will be happening. We're going to dig out completely and redesign and then pave the airport parking ramps, and that's an important piece right now. The ramps that where we park extra aircraft that land and want to tie down and stay for a few days are so deteriorated that you can't even sweep them up or vacuum up all the debris. It just keeps coming up. It never ends, and so that's dangerous. The propellers suck that gravel up, and then they fling it sideways, and it's you're dodging projectiles, and you have damage to the prop tips and all kinds of stuff. So that'll be a really good improvement. And I'm hoping that eventually here within the next several years we will program in the construction of a full-length taxiway, because right now there's no taxiway at all, parallel taxiway that allows an aircraft to leave the parking area and taxi down to the end of the runway and then get onto the runway to take off. Airplanes that want to land and taxi back to parking or pull out from parking and go down to the end of the runway, they have to do it on the runway. So that's not an optimal situation. It's typical of an old dirt and oil runway from the 40s, which is how this airport started, you know, as a smoke jumper base, but not appropriate for a modern airport. So that's something I look forward to.
But these
will be really, really good improvements for that airport. I think it'll, and we have new commercial operators out there, so they'll appreciate the fact that they've got good lighting. And a lot of the users come in late at night, you know, returning from a trip, and it'll be nice to have a runway that you can see.
I know that one of the commercial or the new commercial operator out there is really interested in teaching young people, and how great for them to be able to learn on a more modern style runway. You really can't do the night approaches, I would imagine, without lights.
That's correct.
That would be really challenging. Or maybe they should
without
learn that
good
way.
Lights.
If well you can land on that runway without lights, you can land anywhere.
The current system is an old 110 volt AC system, and the runway lights closest to the electrical panel are the brightest ones, and that's sort of in the middle of the airport. And so as the lights go out toward the end of the runway, they get dimmer and dimmer. And it's
when it gets
funny.
Dark, you should stop.
By the time you get to the end, you've got one candle.
right. So, yeah, and these are things that, you know, the general public isn't aware of, and nor would they be. But the pilot community is aware, and there's just a lot more activity out at that airport that we've seen over the past several years. And now with the new commercial flight instructor business out there, he's flying all day, every day. It's really good.
Every day.
Yes. Lots of new people are discovering the Illinois Valley for the first time because they're coming from outside the area to get their flight instruction. So
it's
good.
That's good. Okay. Any questions of Mr. Graves?
No.
Okay. The summer school, the Air Academy school, the folders are ready for you to pick up.
We got them.
You got them.
Yep,
okay. Because I was going to say, I had them over there in the office for you. So, okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, Barbara brought them back yesterday, I think. When she,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. I just wanted you to have them in advance.
We do. We have them. And we're working, Art Kelly's working on the certificates for the junior high kids who will be going to the summer camp. We're doing two sessions, one next week and then the one the week following for 3 days each. So looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you.
Yep. Thank Appreciate you for your help.
Thank you. All right. Any other further requests for changes on the agenda?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right, we're back to item 2A. This is approval of resolution number 2016-053 in the matter of referring to Josephine County voters at the November 8th, 2016 general election and ordinance imposing a tax on the retail sale of recreational marijuana and marijuana products. And we have County Council Wally Hicks.
Wally Hicks, legal counsel. So a little bit of background here. The voters in the general election of 2014 passed Measure 91, which legalized retail recreational marijuana sales and possession in Oregon. The legislature in the 2015 regular session, the long session, then passed House Bill 3400. Section 34A of House Bill 3400 addresses the local option tax that the county is considering setting to the ballot here today. And paragraph 3 of that section reads, in part, if the governing body of a county adopts an ordinance under this section, the governing body shall refer the measure of the ordinance to the electors of the county for approval at the next statewide general election. The next statewide general election is the November 2016 general election. And then it further states, an ordinance adopted under this section may not impose a tax or fee in excess of 3%. So the county has already held the two readings on the ordinance and approved the ordinance. So the remaining steps are going to be potentially completed today, hopefully, if the board would approve that, which would be a matter of approving the resolution and signing it potentially later today. If you approve it, the resolution 2016-053 would send the ordinance would authorize me to send the ordinance to the clerk along with the ballot title signed by the Board of County Commissioners and the explanatory statement signed by the Board of County Commissioners to the clerk, and there would be a 7-day ballot title challenge period that would then ensue. So estimating that you would sign the ordinance today after approving the resolution. I would drop it to the clerk today. There would be 7 days, meaning this time next week, next Wednesday, that a citizen or an elector could challenge the ballot title. And if that 7-day period passes without a challenge, then I would file an SEL 801. You would be authorizing me through this resolution to file an SEL 801 with the clerk, and that would be the final step in getting it on the ballot.
Okay. Any questions?
There was a non-binding electoral question proposed by the Board of Commissioners in a previous election. I think it was May of 2005. It was earlier.
Oh.
2015?
Yeah. It could have been earlier than 2005. Yeah, 2015 is what I meant. Within the last year.
Yeah,
and it referenced a retail sales element because we had seen the legislation proposed. And that passed. Although Measure 91 didn't pass the electorate of Josephine County, it still passed the statewide. And that was a pretty close election. So I think we're doing this well within what the voters have already spoken and said pretty definitively that they were interested. If recreational marijuana was legalized, they were inclined to support taxing it. So we're not doing anything that they frankly have not already, you know, said. It could change, but this is just working within the parameters of what the state allowed under 3400. I really appreciate you working on this, and I appreciate the people's patience in passing the ordinance and allowing the county to kind of get it right the first time. There were some things that could have been a little misunderstood, but now I think it's a really good product. I think the timeline worked out well to have those 13 days between two readings. The city council doesn't always have to do that, and sometimes they'll have a first and second reading within one evening. And I think we're really well served by having that duration of time to go back and say, what are those things that could have been misunderstood? Our intent was fairly clear, but it may not have been reflected exactly or consistently throughout it. And now I think we've got a really good product that reflects exactly what the board thinks that the community will support. So very supportive of this. Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Thank you. You have any questions, Commissioner?
I'm just glad to see it moving and get it done so we can get a decision on whether or not we can or cannot impose a 3% tax or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Moving on to item 2B, Commissioner Hare. This is approval of resolution 2016-054 in the matter of authorizing the filing of application with the Federal Transit Administration and Operating Administration of the United States Department of Transportation for federal transportation assistance authorized by Chapter 53 of Title 49 of the United States Code and any other federal statutes administered by the Federal Transit, I think we left
administration,
a word off.
But
yeah, I was going to say administration. Yeah. There's a word left off.
They must have ran out of time
yeah,
or room or
words.
Something. This sounds like a really official, very important document, but frankly, all it is designating by the county, the Board of Commissioners, a designee within the county who has the authority to sign on behalf of the board for applying for federal administration, transit administration monies. So we're designating our finance director in conjunction with Scott Chansey, our transit administrator, but basically it's just allocating, designating Mr. Arthur O'Hare, our finance director, as the administrator of this application. So after they apply, they'll hopefully be approved, and then when they receive the funds, the board will sign the acceptance letter of those funds.
Yeah, that's one of the issues we have in regards to not having an administrator or manager is that we always having to deal with very small things or trivial things on short notice and have to have a meeting to do it when really it's administrative. There's no decision to it. It's just administrative. So this is going to help that situation for this particular activity.
It seems like we have to do this fairly regularly, especially with Mr. Chansey and the transit department, because a lot of those funds are federal transit administration funds. And so, like with public health at the state, they're constantly
public
doing
health
that.
As another, anytime you have federal money, this yep. comes in, and then they're always changing things. I can't remember. It seems to me the first year I was here, we had something like 20-some different little amendments that didn't amount to anything. It was change of time, change of, you know, a few dollars. You know, it was really cumbersome.
Yep.
But you got to do it. So, okay, item 2C, and this is Commissioner Heck, approval of report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to Ordinance 2014-003.
And I'm glad to have our professional property management expert on hand.
Evidence.
Yeah, probably evidence, yeah. So, Carrie Lee, if you could fill in any. The big picture is this is a bunch of
stuff.
That you have worked through, identified, categorized, and now just seeking to approve the disposal of it.
That's correct. Carrie Lee, Josephine County Sheriff's Office. That's correct. I believe the list is over 200 items that I gave you this time. Trying to purge as fast as we can. The warehouse just has too much stuff that needs to get out of there. It's a very time-consuming process to research the cases, make sure everybody's been adjudicated, all the so appeals are over and all of that. and Mr. Heck, you were out there last week, so you have an idea of the scope that we're dealing with. So just want to get rid of stuff.
I saw that list. It's like a laundry list of stuff.
Stuff. I have other words for it on occasion, but stuff works.
Yeah, that works. Okay.
Well, the sad reality is that how you have come into possession of it is because individuals have gone out and stolen this stuff, and now they get arrested. Now all of this stuff comes back.
Right.
You try to identify who the owners were, but just because I've lost my yellow bicycle,
right,
and there's four yellow bicycles in your room over there, that does not mean I can go out and take one of them. There has to be some identification
process.
Yeah,
you have to give me some reasonable identification.
Right.
And anybody who's listening to this out there, if you take pictures, just take a half hour, take your cell phone, walk around the house, take a bunch of pictures, put those pictures on a thumb drive. Don't put the pictures on your computer, which is going to get stolen. Put them in a safe deposit box. Put them in your purse. You know, put it somewhere that is with you or not in your house, which is where they're going.
A lot of people email them to themselves, and they're out there, like, on the cloud of it.
Right.
Yahoo or Gmail account,
right.
And that way you can go back through your emails and say, that's
right.
That's
and if you
bike.
Can give me, I'm really good at pictures. You know, you get these Thanksgiving pictures, and let's say all their china was stolen. Well, what's in the background of a Thanksgiving picture? The china. I'm really good at identifying background stuff in pictures. So just take a half hour, take pictures of everything in your house. You know, all your little. Can't think of the word right now.
Curios and knickknacks.
Thank you. That's the one. because those are the hardest items to get back. And those are the easiest for you not to realize they're gone.
Mm.
Because they're just there. So, just take some pictures and inscribe if there's some steel or metal on it, or even plastic, you know, get one of those inscriber things and put some numbers on it. Anything you can do that would help us get your property back to you would be awesome.
Great. But this property represents a failure on whose ever part to do that. This is all not identified, non-claimed items that are collecting high-quality dust in your over-cramped facility.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
When you talk about describing property, and I've done that, I've photographed, and what I do, and this is a suggestion that was given to me some time ago after my house had been burglarized, is that not only taking pictures of all the objects, but taking pictures of a wall. I mean, just face
right,
the wall.
Exactly.
That way it takes a picture of the furniture that's there and what's sitting on it, as you said, the pictures, whatever is there, which helps you when you're trying to identify it as to what it looked like. To begin with, you know, did it have handles on it or not? And some people don't know. I mean, they have the stuff
right.
They don't know.
Right.
But I think that, as I said, my house was burglarized at one time, and I did get one item back. The others never did turn up anywhere. But one that was stolen was a ring that was given to me. It was a Lindy Star Sapphire that was given to me by my parents when I graduated from high school. Mm. And it was mounted in white gold. And when you put the ring on with the lettering going a certain direction, one prong was loose. And that's how I identified the ring. And they said, well, you know, there's nothing. How can you identify it? And I said, okay, if I put it on my finger a certain way with the information on the inside, that prong is going to be loose. And they said, okay. And they checked it, sure enough. So I got my ring back.
Right.
But people don't realize there are little things like that that they can document right. to people like you and describe it. And then you can say, yeah, I've got that one.
Right. I've had cases like that. One lady had a bike, and it was like a Huffy or something that I had. At that time, I had hundreds of. And she said, yeah, you can take the handle off, the handlebar, the little plastic part, you can take that off, and there's a screwdriver in there because the chain always comes loose. So it's like, okay, that's yours.
Uh-huh. Yeah, anything like that to identify it. If you can describe that, you're home free.
That's right. That's right. And I find that true victims, you know, this big case that we've been dealing with, they mix up the, I'll use toolboxes as an example, they mix all the tools up. And so I had one gentleman out there, it was out there 8.5 hours getting his tools back, but it was very expensive machining tools. And he went through every toolbox, this is my toolbox, but these aren't my tools.
Uh-huh.
Or this isn't my toolbox, but these are my tools. You know, and I find that true victims are quite honest, and I've only had my hackle come up just a couple of times when people were telling me something was theirs, and I'm like,
People, and I think when people have been victimized, they want to be very precise in getting back what is theirs because
right.
they know someone else is a victim of this other
right.
stuff.
Exactly.
They need their stuff back.
They don't want to take something that's not theirs or something that someone else's. And I'm, are you missing this?
Uh-huh.
Well, yes. Hey, you're not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for what you do.
Lee, how do people get in touch with you? Calling the sheriff's office sometimes is kind of a not exactly the most.
Yeah, I have a direct line. It's 541-474-5128. Or my email address, which is the fastest way to get me, is K, the letter K, L-E-E, at C-O dot Josephine dot O-R dot U-S.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, you too. Okay, moving on to item 2, and this is D, E, and F. Commissioner Hare, these are various
timber sale modifications. The first one is a hardwood timber sale, which we don't do very often, but in this case we had some damaged, we had a hardwood timber sale, and then we had the Douglas complex adjacent to it, and so we modified the size of the timber sale to access some other trees, hardwoods and conifers. That changed the like the right-of-way, the easement type of cost that wasn't included in the original sale. And so this is a modification. Cost of the county is roughly $4,000 for paying for that access. And it's basically the same style of cost incurred. There's for the next one, it's let's see if I got that right.
First one was the Hungry Hill, and the second one's Waterbrook.
Yes.
Page 31.
Timber sale 2016 T-6 has a cost of about $1,000 as a purchaser credit. So the purchaser paid for that access, and the board, the county, provides that. Usually provides that as part of the timber sale. We incur that cost, and then the third one. Is a cost of just under $1,000 of $977.95, and it's a similar right-of-way.
That's the Colby Gulch.
Yeah, timber sale contract 2016 T-8. So,
okay. All right. Any questions on those, Commissioner Hick?
No.
Okay.
It's cleaning up loose ends.
These are just pretty much loose ends again. we have to do. Thank you, Commissioner Hare. We've already done G. Item 2H, approval of property reserve request for the fairgrounds electronic signboard. Commissioner Heck?
The signboard that has, we've been here 20 years. And I was trying to think of how often has that signboard actually worked. It was replaced, rebuilt, renewed, and it stumbled for a brief period of time. And it has not worked as it has supposed to have worked for 5-8 years. and it is finally now has completely died. It has a couple lights that are available if you wanted to see a bulb. So anyway, they put out a plan to try to replace that, and this is simply approving the fairgrounds electronic board sign that has been looked at, approved, and can be done, and it will work, and to have this thing fixed as quickly as possible. There is effort underway to have the sign fully funded by different grants, but because of the window of use for the sign, wanting to get it up and done as soon as possible, that was the reason for the request, and the money would be coming out of the property reserve funds, which would also then be repaid by the fairgrounds.
I think this is a technique that, I don't know if it's been used much in the past, but we've used it a couple of times, and I think this is a good way for us to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves, or needs that present themselves, such as in this situation, that we can be of assistance to our departments. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Well, they'll also be able to sell advertising on the signboard, too, so there'll be a source of income, and over the process of time, it will repay it. But it's the initial funds that they will be taken from the property reserve fund.
Thank you.
So
the
original intent of the property reserve was to really take care of things that were integral facility types of things. The roof and the Dimmock Tower was really the catalyst for establishing this fund. I think the use has been it's been broadened, not inappropriately. It's just there's got to be, from my standpoint, there hasn't been a contribution by the fair into that fund, and that's the need for the repayment. If the fair, like the board or the Ambassador or some other of these departments, contribute on a monthly basis a percentage of their cost of being housed, those costs are just absorbed, and there's not a need to repay that because they're paying for it over time. But this is one of those elements that's outside of that scope but needs to be done, and it has a repayment plan and schedule. It's all been laid out and budgeted and approved, and it should be done in a shorter duration of time than what was expected, but at some point, it will be repaid, and I think that's a positive thing, because you don't want there to be more water going out of the container than is coming in, and then when you need it, you don't have the resources to fix those catastrophic roofs. One of the things that I'd say I'm positive about how the county manages that fund, when you see other entities, other municipalities or agencies going out for perhaps a bond to do kind of repairs, annual maintenance things, Josephine County will likely never have to do that because of a financial decision that was made, I think, back in 2005 and maintained through this board. There's been significant pressure to do stuff with that money, but we don't have to ask the taxpayers for a bond to fix a roof or to repair a pipe or remove some asbestos or do a remodel. We've got the money sitting there because of good financial decisions in the past and the current board. So I think it's just an opportunity. We need to say thanks to our managers for doing that and for a good fiscal policy. And the result is we have money to borrow against to do this. It doesn't impact the general fund.
That is not a unique concept to do that, but you'd be surprised at the number that don't do that.
Right.
That's one thing about Josephine County that I've had comments from other people. They say, you guys don't have much money, but how do you manage to keep going? Well, how we manage to keep going is what little we have. We have a finance plan in place where we save for rainy days for things like this. People talk, you need to save for a rainy day. Well, we can't change what was done in the past. We can only change what we have right now, and that was done by the finance and the board, like you say, about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 8 to 10 years ago, and it has served us well because we've had situations. We have aging facilities, and if we would have had something like that when we acquired the Dimmock Tower, the Dimmock Tower would not have ended up where it is now. It would still be standing because those kinds of buildings are 100-year buildings, and it was barely 60 years old and had to be torn down because of a lack of a decision on a previous board. of putting a roof on the building. So we lost an asset. And this board and probably the ones in the last 8 to 10 years, that's not going to happen again.
No.
And we've had the failure of some HVACs, you know, air conditioning systems we've had to replace, and it comes out of that fund. Mm-hmm. And right now we have a building that needs a roof, a substantial cost, just across the street for corrections, and we have the money.
Yep.
So that we don't have to go to the public and say, gee, we have these deteriorating facilities and we need to ask you for funds. Not this case. So.
And I think we've also really been aggressive about maintaining our asset. We don't wait till there's a catastrophic failure to replace a pipe or to replace a roof. We're proactive, and frankly, I think that saves money in the long run.
Yes,
not
it
having
does.
To do as much.
That's right.
You know, our infrastructure is aging. I think, you know, the courthouse is 100 years old, and that building that we're replacing the roof on, but it's still structurally sound because we maintain it. And I think Mr. Johnson, our facilities manager, deserves a tremendous amount of credit for really being proactive. We've got an aging jail. If people think that it's cheap to maintain infrastructure like that, even though it's just approaching 20 years old, the construction elements that were shortcuts sometimes, they're paying the price. We're paying the price. The piper's coming to call. Pipes in walls of concrete are starting to fail, and there's a significant amount of potential liability with that infrastructure right there. And we hopefully have the reserve to take care of that. It isn't as much as it's dictated in this order. There's about $1.1 million of forest reserve from the Douglas Complex timber sales that have gone into that this board has set aside and has the intent of establishing a long-term trust. So that balance, being that it's pretty significant, isn't the full picture. There are other departments using that as kind of their own reserve, and that's all accounted for, and those records are maintained, and it will be established.
It's in the budget
soon.
Online.
Yep.
It's all there. So, okay. Item 2I, which is the approval of the contract for personal service amendment number 1 with OBEC Consulting Engineers for replacement of the McMullen Creek Dam Bridge, allowing additional payments in the amount of $145,984.93 for a total contract amount of $239,234.18. Commissioner Hare. That sounds like a lot, but it's pretty simple also.
Well, half of those funds are grant funds, and so our initial kind of stab at this project, there's an element of the overflow at the McMullen Dam, making Lake Selmac, that's failed. And so it's at the top of the list for the state as far as infrastructure for facilities like this is a concern. If we have a high water situation, we could be in trouble. There's 23 homes that are downstream from that area. I don't think they're in jeopardy, but long term, if you don't maintain infrastructure, it costs you a whole lot more to do to replace it or what have you, as opposed to just maintain it. It hasn't been adequately maintained, I would say, for the last 30 years, and our goal with this is to actually put forward a really comprehensive evaluation of the situation so that we can apply for state funds through Oregon Water Resources to help pay for this. If we didn't pursue these grants, and I've looked at that as a cost benefit, you know, investing this $145,000 on the front end and saying, if you don't do that, you're going to have the entire costs of the project, which could be, I've heard, as much as $1 million. It sounds like a lot of money to me, but when you start looking at the engineering that's required for these things and the potential liability for these engineering firms and getting it right, there's a number of different things that have to happen. The complexity of this issue is only exacerbated because we're replacing the spillway, which is different than the overflow, going on Lakeshore Drive. So there's a ODOT focused public works project, and then there's the county, the parks department is really in charge of Lake Selmac, but the public works department is taking this on because it's in their wheelhouse. The thing is nobody's been capturing, you know, set aside money to help pay for this over time. So this is another opportunity where we're leveraging funds and we're we're utilizing our property reserve. There isn't really a payback schedule for this. We can't start charging, putting in a toll road necessarily on that bridge or what have you. It's just kind of the cost of the infrastructure over time. But we are looking to have a comprehensive overview so we can leverage state funds, and that's what this additional grant funds are trying to accomplish.
I guess it comes with having grandchildren. When you said toll road, we can't do a toll road. I'm thinking, well, maybe we could put a troll. I guess that's going to my grandkids. Reading stories to the grandkids. Troll road. All right. Thank you. We are now to the end of the administrative actions and time for requests and comments from the citizens. Anyone like to speak at this time on? Yes. Mr. Ford.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. My wife and I have been coming to these meetings longer than any of you have been commissioners. And what I've seen over the years, and with Mr. Graves here today, it kind of brought up, well, actually last Thursday brought up one that a few boards ago, we had a county commissioner here that almost ruined our airports. They were totally not funded. No one wanted to speak to us. Mr. Graves, when he came on board, has worked hard for the last, I believe it's just around 5 years or more to fix that process. And, you know, all we got for a long time was really bad press, most of it not deserved. Unfortunately, that's gone now. What I see, and this board, for whatever, I guess it's just timing, you've replaced a lot of managers in the last 4 years. And not that the old ones were bad, but I think that it reflects well on you that the quality of the people that we have working in our departments, from our managers on down, I mean, I'm talking public works, transit, the fairgrounds, parks, you know, public health. These people, and I don't quite know why they come here sometimes, because they probably are better paying jobs elsewhere in the state or maybe even out of the state, but I think it's fortunate for our county that these quality of managers come on board, and I think that reflects well on you as you went out and looked to get the best quality of person for the price. And I think that I'm involved with a couple of boards that these people sit on, the timber in the parks. It's amazing how well we function as a small county with not a lot of funds. One of the things other boards I sit on is I call it ODOT Inc. It shows you how dysfunctional some of these larger groups can be. I think this county does well with what we have to put a quality product out there, and it's a reflection on our managers in all of our departments. I think they do a wonderful job. So we don't hear that a lot. Unfortunately, it seems like the news in general seems to want to focus on the bad things and the unfortunate things that happen, and we don't probably put enough effort into the things that do function well. So I think that it's a reflection on you as a BCC and our different departments on how well they work, and just we end up with a pretty good product in Josephine County. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Anyone else wish to speak? Okay. I'll bring it back to the board.
I'd just like to echo Mr. Ford's comments and clarify that Rob Brandis is frankly the only manager that I didn't hire since I've been here. And there's only three elected officials that have been here the whole time. I think it's Connie, the surveyor, and myself. Everyone else has been new since then. It's been challenging times, and I think you put it really well that not that the previous managers or electeds didn't have their virtues and didn't do a good job. It's that sometimes when I started, we had 446 employees, and we've been down to 278. We're about to right around 315, 317, 320 right now. A lot of people can't deal with that. They don't know how to do the same job with less. But if you have a new parks director who doesn't know what it was like to have 17 staff, and now she has seven, and she's still managing the same parks department that the previous manager was, she doesn't know any better, you know? And it's a positive thing from a standpoint that she's just seeing potential, not where we've been and how far we've come as far as being reduced. And that's just a different mentality. I think that she's looking at things, you know, through a different lens. And she's saying, well, why can't we do it this way? For instance, you're on the Parks Advisory Board. We close a lot of, a couple of our parks through the cold season, through the rainy season, from about October through April. And she's saying, well, why don't we allow people who want to stay in our parks and RVs longer throughout that time of year? Because we have a restriction of 1 to 2 weeks, something like that, 10 days. You can't stay in our park for any reason, tent camping or in a trailer or an RV for longer than that. That doesn't necessarily make sense for people who are up here and want to rent by the week, want to rent by the month. And so she's going to propose to open that restriction up. It's just that kind of mentality, that kind of thought, multiplied 100 times in different departments that are making the difference between the three departments that were in the red when I came on board, Parks, Public Health, and the Fairgrounds, you know, of not being here today. There was a very good chance 5-6 years ago we wouldn't have even had a fair this week. You know, they were running a deficit of over $300,000. And now, you know, they're in the black. And it's because of Mary Groves, all of the volunteers on the Fairgrounds Board, the people in the parks, the people in public health, Diane Hoover coming in here and finding a way to make it happen and not taking no for an answer. And I can't commend them and their activities enough. We still have work to do. I don't think we'll ever get out of that. But I think the progress we made provides hope to me that we have a long way to go, but we can get there because look at where we've come from. Back from, I wouldn't say extinction, but almost from a standpoint. Can we take any challenge coming forward in the future? I don't know. I wouldn't say that. But we can handle a lot here in Josephine County. Will we be everything we used to be? Probably not. We will never have 600 employees the way we used to. A lot of that had to do with outsourcing mental health, but I still think that we're struggling to find that balance of being too small, which I think we were at 278, and being too big, maybe at 440. Somewhere in between is right where we need to be, and I think the public, the staff, the county, the board, we're all recognizing that, and we're going to work together, hopefully, to figure out where that balance is. And that's the goal, is providing the highest quality of service to the constituents we serve at the most reasonable of cost. And you're not going to get a better bang for your buck at 58 cents per thousand anywhere in the state, let alone maybe the country. And I think I appreciate the fact that you get that. I didn't get that before I took this job. And you rarely have the opportunity, if you don't come to these meetings, work with the staff, understand the budget. But once you do, people's tenor changes dramatically. And so just encourage people to continue to see what's going on. And we want to make it as transparent as possible and show you, tell you all the good things that I think we're doing and own up to the things that maybe didn't happen the way we wanted to and learn from that. So thank you, Mr. Ford. Appreciate you both coming to these meetings. Wish we had more people in our community who shared your passion for the community at large, but we do have a lot of people. They're just very busy.
Commissioner Heck?
You're here. No.
No? As to what Mr. Ford said, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And I'm going to try to say something here, and I hope it comes out the way I intend it and the way I mean it. What happened was that we had a community, and I call it the mono economy, which was the timber industry. That's the way this community thrived for the better part of probably 80 to 100 years. So I think what happened is that there was a change occurring, but the residents and the employees and the people in the community, whenever you lose an industry, it's hard to change your focus, particularly if it's personal. If you've lost your job or you've lost your business in that industry, that's very personal. And it's very hard to think outside of that box. But what happened was that there were a lot of these people that were in the industry that started doing other things, other businesses. And we are more diverse today than this county has ever been. You know, the the communications industries, the industries that having to do with technology, and I think there's 12 identified different categories of technology industries, everything from online wholesaling to retailing to manufacturing, you name it, the technology industries. And being so deeply immersed in the economic activities of the region that I have been in the last 3 years, you see these. People say, well, look at our storefronts. We have a terrible economy. And sometimes it's almost like a ceiling. People keep hitting this, that we have a terrible economy. We're having trouble here. But when you look at the numbers, that is different. It tells a different story. And I'm not minimizing the timber industry, and we don't give up on the timber industry, because when you look at the numbers of that, wood products industries are still a very critically important industry to our area, and we need to continue to foster that. But we need to look at these other industries and other businesses that are growing, just like the activity at the airport. You know, what is generated by companies like those that are using the airport that create jobs in other, whether it be service industries, professional industries, manufacturing, whatever. Those types of businesses, the manufacturing businesses that have actually, manufacturing is one of our leading growth industries in the region. And you don't see those because they're in buildings out in the county somewhere. They don't have storefronts. And so a lot of our entrepreneurs that we've had in our area, whether it be Nathan Sled with the Zipline Company, or whether it be the Krauss Craft, or whether it be the Dutch Brothers, we have a lot of them. Those are just three people recognize, but there's a lot of others out there as well. They don't have storefronts. You know, they started out of their home or their garage, or they've built a business out in the community somewhere, rather than a storefront. So when we look at that, we have opportunities out there that I think what we have done when we've hired these new department heads, one of some of the characteristics that I've looked for in all of them when we interview is, how creative are they? You know, how much do they think outside the box? How much are they, you know, into doing challenging things? Do they like a challenge, or they maintain status quo type of attitude? And for them to recognize the potential of the department they're going to be in. And I think that we've all done that in some way or another when we've interviewed these people. And the most prevalent one, of course, is the most recent one, is when we hired our planning director. Status quo was not good. Our planning department had problems for years, and we'd gone through a lot of employees in our planning department. That does not help. You don't get continuity, you don't get stability, you don't get good service, period. And so we were looking for someone who, as we have with all of them, how do they fit in the community, and what do they do, and what do they see as far as being creative and seeing what can happen here, the potential that's out there. And I think that's one of the things that we have really tried to do, and I thank you, Mr. Ford, I think we've succeeded in getting those kinds of people, and that's why they're here. They're not here because we can pay them more than some other county, or they're not here because they can have an empire. They're here because they see the challenge, and they're up to it. And I think that's one of the things that I really am proud of, as far as the people that we have hired in the county. So they do a great job, and we try to commend them as much as we can, because we don't get bonuses or anything, but I think that any time we have the opportunity to tell them they've done a good job, and I think you probably do the same thing, as thank you, you know, to these people. And as to this board, you'll probably not see as much diversity as there is on this board, but I tell you what, we all know the mission of this board, regardless of what our differences are or what our beliefs are or what our philosophies are. We know one thing: we have to get the job done, and we have to do it for the citizens of the community, not for ourselves. And I think that's why this board has worked. I really do. I thank you both, because I think that's why it's worked. Do we have our differences? Sure. Are we very different? Yes, we are. But you know what? We have a mission, and we know what that is, and we stick with it. So thank you both. Okay. All right, moving on. I will entertain a motion to approve item 2A, which is the resolution number 2016-053, in the matter of referring to the Josephine County voters on the November 8th general election an ordinance imposing a tax on the retail sale of recreational marijuana and marijuana products. And someone asked me the other day why I didn't declare a conflict of interest. I'm not engaged in any recreational marijuana enterprises. So Anyway, I'll entertain a motion for that.
Madam Chair, I'd move for approval of Resolution 2016-053 in including November 8th, 2016.
Mm. And I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Nope.
Nope. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Item 2B, approval resolution number 2016-054 in the matter of authorizing the filing of application with the Federal Transit Administration and Operating Administration of the United States Department of Transportation for federal transportation assistance authorized by Chapter 53 of Title 49 of the United States Code and any other federal statutes administered by the Federal Trade Transit Administration.
I'd so move.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
I have a motion to second. Any further discussion?
Just want to thank Mr. Chansey for his diligence in our transit department. It's an unsung element, like so many.
Yeah, he's one of those that is exemplary in finding opportunities to move forward. So he's good at that, very good at that. Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 2C, approval of report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to Ordinance 2014-003.
That's a move.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? Being none, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. And I would like to ask Commissioner Hare, would you like to combine a motion?
I'd be happy to provide a motion that approves item 2, D, E, and F, which are all timber sale modifications, the first being approval of the Hungry Hill Hardwood Sale Contract 2011-T-9, modification number 2, between Josephine County and Ralph
Champy.
Approval, item number 2E is approval of Waterbrook Timber Sale Contract 2016-T-6, modification number 1, between Josephine County and Murphy Company. And item number 2F is approval of Colby Gulch Timber Sale Contract 2016-T-8, modification number 1, between Josephine County and Murphy Company.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay, this is another where we have a new head of the department, and he's really been working hard to update and bring some changes to our forestry department that will help to facilitate revenue, increase revenue to the county from our timber lands, which we own, 32,000 acres of lands. So, very good. Any further discussion? Being none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 2G, approval of the master consulting agreement with WH Pacific for environmental engineering design and engineering construction services of FAA AIP projects at the Grants Pass Airport.
That's a move.
Approve. Second.
Okay, any further discussion?
No.
Okay, being none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Commissioner
Hare? Yes.
Commissioner
yes, motion carries. Item 2H, approval of properties reserve request for the fairgrounds electronic signboard.
And I would so move.
Second that.
Any further discussion?
No.
Okay. I'm on roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Item 2I, approval of contract for personal services amendment number 1 with OBEC consulting engineers for replacement of the McMullen Creek Dam bridge, allowing additional payments in the amount of $145,984.93 for a total contract amount of $239,234.18.
Move for approval.
And I'll happily second that.
Okay, any further discussion?
No.
Okay, motion, please roll call.
Commissioner
yes.
Commissioner
yes.
Commissioner
yes, motion carries. All right, our consent calendar today, item 4A, several minutes, County Administration Workshop, July 28th, 2016, General Discussion, August 2nd, 2016, Weekly Business Session, August 3rd, 2016, Executive Session, the open portion of the meeting, August 3rd, 2016, Public Hearing, Dog Chasing Livestock, August 3rd, 2016, General Discussion, August 4th, 2016. Item 4B, order number 2016-032, in the matter of determination as to a dog impounded under the authority of ORS 609.155 for killing, wounding, injuring, or chasing livestock and imposition of civil penalties. This was a hearing that was held by the board, and by necessity, we have to bring it forward for approval. Is there any, are there any questions on that? The board remember, okay, the board remembers that one. Okay, item 4C, task order number one with WH Pacific for environmental and engineering design services on the Grants Pass Airport Taxiway Design Project. And item 4D, the task order number one with Precision Approach Engineering for environmental and engineering design services at the Illinois Valley Airport for FAA AIP Grant 007 for upgrade runway lighting, airport electrical services, and redesign park ramps.
Full agenda today, Madam Chair. I'd move for approval of items 4A through D.
And I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion?
I think it's important for people to note that the consent calendar is usually things that are not budgetary or administrative in nature, and we review all of these things at least a Thursday beforehand, 6 days at our admin meeting. It'll take place tomorrow for the following week's weekly business session. So if we cursorily review them here, it's because they've had plenty of review prior to this meeting.
And our Thursday meeting is at 9 a.m., and it's open to the public, though we don't accept public comment. It is open to the public, and you're certainly welcome to meet with any of the board members before or after that meeting to ask questions. So just because we don't take comment doesn't mean you don't have the opportunity for input to the board. You do. You can meet with us or email us or call us or whatever. Okay. I will. I have a motion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
In a second.
In a second. Okay. All right. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Harris.
Yes.
Commissioner Day.
Yes.
Commissioner.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. Anything else that needs to come before the board today?
I have nothing.
No.
No. Okay. Let's see. Matters from commissioners. Anything else?
I mentioned with the proclamation earlier, which the board approved, there's a celebratory event taking place by the, I guess it's the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association, or there's the director of that, I think, is the bee girl. She's got this this opportunity, hive-to-table event at Hanley Farms. It's taking place August 20th. Hanley Farms is in Central Point. It's at 7 p.m. Tickets are available online, and just if you're in the neighborhood or interested, you do need tickets, so you need to plan ahead to do that. But there are several other events, I'm sure, that are going to be taking place throughout the year that really focus on bees, and it's a pretty important component of our agricultural system, and so wanted to highlight that. Also, I don't want to steal Commissioner Heck's thunder, but the fairgrounds is taking place, and one element of that that takes place Saturday morning is the junior livestock auction that's sponsored by the young farmers for 4-H and FFA kids to auction off their project, either a pig, a sheep, I think goats were, meat goats were featured last year, or beef. They used to have chickens and rabbits. I don't think they do that much anymore, but it's a great opportunity to support youth in our community who are doing great things, learning leadership skills and responsibility of having to maintain and care for an animal. And really the culmination of that is going through a painful process of selling that animal that they've gotten so close to over the last 3 months to a year or greater for a beef. So having that check at the end of the is only one portion of the proud moment. You know, they show their animals over the last couple of days, maybe tomorrow too, today or so, and then they do well or whatever, and then they sell their animal on Saturday morning at the fairgrounds. It's the auction starts at 10 o'clock. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to any one of the board members or the fairgrounds, the young farmers. We can answer those questions. Go in together with somebody else. Sometimes they can be kind of expensive, at least the last couple of years, which is a good thing for the kids. But if you can't stomach the whole thing at once, you can half a beef or half a pig or whatever, go into it with somebody else, and it's a fun time. Hopefully it won't be too terribly hot that day, but I think it's going to be kind of warm.
Yeah, the ignore the weather, it's going to be peachy, ideal, wonderful. The auction does begin at 10 o'clock on Saturday, and as Commissioner Hare was mentioning, there are many who go together and buy animals to support the kids, the 4-H kids are doing it, but also to support many of the different organizations in the county. There are many nonprofits in the county that receive a good share of their food through this auction and the people's kindness in buying these animals and then donating them to different organizations. So it's just a wonderful enjoyment to have together at the auction. Some of the kids might not be considering it a wonderful enjoyment, but still, it's a wonderful exercise we can enjoy. As I said, fair began about 40 minutes ago, 10 o'clock this morning. It opened up, and it'll continue on through Saturday night about after 10. And there'll be a lot of different entertainment groups that are there, different the rodeo's coming, all kinds. It's just all kinds of stuff. There are many different places in the city and county where the menus, look at thinking of the beef again, where the programs are given out and sold out. There's online. You can go to the website of the county and find out the agenda of the fair. The fairgrounds has their own website. You can find out that information there as well. Passes and all that kind of stuff I'm sure everybody knows about. But this is a good time of the year, and it's a delightful, fun time, enjoyable time. And there's a lot of different projects out there that people have spent a lot of hours on, whether it's from flower arrangements to the animals. It's a wonderful time to commend community involvement and support of those who have done these kinds of things. Sometimes we can do things that are perfectly legal and legitimate to do, and we forget about the spillover effect that it has upon adjacent people and adjacent parties. And we need to be sensitive to that, because there are some people that are very, very impacted, physically and emotionally impacted by activities that somebody or some company has done. And it might be legal to do, but there needs to be a real sense of desire to remediate any of the difficulties. But somewhere along the line, the bottom pill has to be swallowed. This is as much as we can go. But we've got a situation down in the Illinois Valley, in the just outside the city limits, over the fence line in Cave Junction, where there is some real tension going on that is demonstrating itself in health issues, and when people are on the phone and crying and because of the situation that they're having to undergo. It needs to be remediated. It needs to have a dialogue between individuals and companies and people, and to remind ourselves, just because it's right or just because it's legal for me to do doesn't mean that it's right for me to do. But we need to have a great sensitivity to that, and that's one of the things I'm very pleased about as far as in the county, and having been here now 20 years and seeing many obstacles faced, looked at, and remediated, and not always done to everybody's preference. But we talk about it, we solve them, and we move on with a sense of success and a sense of satisfaction that we have done it and we've tried our best and we have given it a good shot, and we like the end result. It might not be everything I want, but I know that I was heard, and we can move on together in that. But it's a challenge to constantly reevaluate that, and not just consider, is this something legal for me to do? And it's more to that than just legal. So, end of my time.
Well, you were talking about the sale of the animals at 10 o'clock on Saturday, and I know Commissioner Hare always goes, and I kind of think Commissioner Heck does as well. And I've been a few times, but if the two of you wish to go in with me to buy a hog, I'd be glad to do that. So, offers there.
Okay.
So,
which third do you want? Front third, back third, or?
Well,
you want
to take the back third because that's where the hams are.
I'll
you
get
can
stuck.
Have the snout.
I'll get stuck with the squeal.
And the ears.
They say they used to process.
You can make head cheese out of
squeal.
That. You know that, don't you, Commissioner Heck?
Yes,
you can
absolutely.
Make head cheese.
Absolutely. I know how it's done. I've never eaten it. I have no desire to.
Yeah, I used to watch Grandma make it. Ooh, she always wanted the head. When you butcher, bring the head to me.
Yeah.
You can have it, Grandma. Okay, but I'm willing to do that. If that's what happens, just let me know, and I'll be glad
so
to
who's
going to
be the obligating partner to run to the bid? Is that going to be you, Commissioner?
Are you going to be?
I've done it before.
I know.
Okay, we'll let you do the bidding.
Marginally qualified.
Because we don't want to end up there and be bidding against each
other.
Right.
That
probably would be amateurish of us to go in together and bid against each other.
It
wouldn't be the first
wouldn't
time, I'm sure,
time.
That's happened, but.
Yeah, we're kind of like people in an elevator when we go places, so we don't want, you know, all three of us together, so
yep.
One would be on one side bidding against the other, so we will let you do the bidding.
Sounds like it
for me.
I will not raise my hand.
Okay.
Okay.
Or have a conversation that's flamboyant.
I block what?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that happen. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I had one thing that I think that we'd be remiss if we didn't recognize the fact that there's a couple of families in our community that are homeless right now as a result of a fire that took place last week in Selma. We hope that, you know, this never happens, but then when it does, we're just thankful that it happened, it didn't happen to us. But I think there's, you know, looking at the fires that are happening in California, nobody is exempt from this. It doesn't matter where you live, whether it's in the, you know, outskirts of the county, farthest remote area, or right in town, fire is devastating. One of the remarks that was made on Facebook by a person I personally know who was impacted by this said there are other catastrophes, natural hazards or whatever, that do damage to homes, tornadoes, floods, and other things. But nothing does what fire does. When they came back, I saw some pictures. There's nothing left of their home. There are no pictures. There are no mementos. Nothing survived. The bike was, you know, that I saw was completely melted. It got so hot. The only thing left of their home is the chimney. And imagine how devastating and how quickly you have to respond. It's not just taking the pictures like it was talked about earlier tonight. Getting your stuff prepared so that you're at a level one evacuation right now, today, any time of year, that you should be prepared with those mementos you don't want to live without, because otherwise you're going to be forced to attempt to try to live without everything if that happens in your area. And there won't be time to figure out what it is that you do want to keep and what you don't. You're going to have to go. And unfortunately, that's just a fact of life living in an area where it gets really dry and hot. And I wanted to thank the firefighters who risk a lot, if not everything, going out there and attempting to help people. Sometimes they don't even know who they're helping. They meet this person afterwards and they become incredibly close through a challenging situation. It's heart-wrenching, like nothing else is, to see people's whole lives go up in smoke in a matter of minutes, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. It's just devastating. So my heart goes out to those people, the community that's come together. They had a GoFundMe account you can probably find online that was had a goal of raising $15,000, and in a matter of days they had raised five that I had seen a day or two ago. So they're well on their way. The community, we're blessed to live in a place where people come together, and you may not have a ton. I saw contributions as low as, you know, $25, $10, $15. Every little bit helps if everybody comes together and makes those contributions. And that's the same thing this board would attempt to do with purchasing an animal at the fair. It's not going to change the world. It's not going to even probably change that one kid's life, but it's going to make an impression, and it's what we can do as an example in the community to come together. So I appreciate your offer, Commissioner Walker, and I hope we make that happen.
Make sure it's a cute pig.
They're all cute.
I was going to say, if they taste good, that's certainly a good start.
That's a good start.
So
talking about weather issues, having lived down in Oklahoma for 10 years, there are two things. The fire is one thing. Tornadoes are something. I mean, when you leave your place and you come back and the only thing you've got is a concrete pad that's there, that's it. There's not even a piece of scrap around.
Right.
That is unbelievably devastating. And you realize how much we depend upon markers, on buildings and trees to get direction. And you're completely directionless. You just have no idea of what is north.
You could have lived there your whole life and you go back
and
there's no trees.
You just don't know it.
Yeah. Wow.
I've never been in a tornado. I was in a flood. We did not lose the house, but we lost everything. And then all the pictures and all the stuff, because the flood just soaked everything, ruins it. So any type of, I was very small, I think I was 6 or 7 years old, and you know, to see all of your belongings floating out the window and going away, it's like, ugh, you know. And I remember it was devastating to my parents. I remember that. But, you know, when we have here locally the issue of fire, every area has some kind of thing we have to deal with. And like Commissioner Hare said, we should always be at a level one. Be prepared. Know where your stuff is and have it together and have it ready to go that you can say, take that whole box or take that whole file cabinet or take that whole drawer, whatever you have it in, have it all together, you know, so that you can just take that. And one thing I would like to mention, too, is that fortunately I don't hear of anybody's lost their animals out there, but I know I talked to Diane Hoover, didn't talk to her, I was texting her, during the fire out there, and she was prepared. She had 35 animal cages ready to go if they called her to come out and get animals. But everybody needs to be prepared when they evacuate. Be prepared to take your animal. Be sure you have whatever you need to take them with you. And I know I have one very large crate that if I need it for my dog, and now I know he'll never go in the crate. But I have a small one for my cat, you know. And if you have more than one cat, you better have more than one cat cage, you know. So plan for it. Know how you're going to do that, because as you say, none of us ever really knows. So. These conversations are meant to be instructional to people because we know what the devastation can be to some of our neighbors, and we'd like to prevent that with others if possible. So, okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Nothing else? We are adjourned at 10:51.